Wild Heritage by Elizabeth McNeill, read by Shona White for Saga Egmont. The seed of the cedar will become cedar. The seed of the bramble can only become bramble. Saint-Exupéry. Prologue. 10 years had passed since an army of navvies swarmed into the peaceful border countryside to create an innovation which was to transform the lives of local people, though at first they were reluctant to accept its benefits. When the navvies tramped away, they left as their legacies a road to the outside world in the form of a network of railway lines, a beautiful railway bridge over the River Tweed, an unmarked grave mound of their dead in the burying ground of the Abbey at Rosewell, and several fatherless children. This is the story of three of these navvy bastards. Chapter 1. 1866. Nanny Rush lay dying. She had grown so thin that her body made only a small mound beneath the white bed cover. Harsh raspings of painfully drawn breath from her half-open mouth almost drowned the sound of sobbing from a young girl kneeling by the side of the bed with her face sunk in her hands.
"Oh, Nanny, dinna die, dinna die. What will we do without you?"
this girl implored.
"Hush, hush," said a small, stout woman standing by the side of the bed.
Her voice was concerned and sympathetic, so the weeping girl turned towards her and was comforted by the touch of soft hands on her back and whispered words.
"You'll be all right. Dinna greet Marie."
"What a way to carry on," said the dying woman's sister, Martha, who was standing on the other side of the bed, her hard grey eye staring at the others. "Take that greeting bairn downstairs, Mrs. Mather. She'll upset my sister," she said.
With gentle hands, Tibby helped the girl to the door and whispered,
"Go and sit down in the parlour with David. Have a drink of milk and something to eat."
The girl always seemed sickly. Although she was 11 years old, she looked about 9, and there was a worrying transparency about her skin often seen in consumption sufferers. When she was told to eat, she refused with a shake of the head.
"I'd rather stay with Nanny. What if she wakes up and wants me?"
Tibby soothed her.
"If she does, I'll call you. I promise."
The girl closed the door behind her, and the women heard her footsteps tiptoeing softly down the wooden stairs. Then Martha raised her eyebrows and said,
"What right is she to be weeping and wailing as if she was real kin?"
"But she's as good as kin," protested Tibby.
Martha snorted.
"No, she's not. She's greeting because she's losing a soft berth. And she's from a bad background. What sort of name's Marie? It's a name for papes."
What she was saying was heard by the woman in bed, for Nanny's eyelids flickered. She gasped and reached out an emaciated hand as she groaned,
"Take care of my bairns when I'm gone."
Tibby hurried over to the bed and wiped the waxen face with the corner of her apron.
"Rest easy, Nanny. The bairns will be all right," she told the suffering women.
Nanny's once bright blue eyes opened and stared into her friend's face.
"I'm dying, Tib," she whispered. "But I didn't want my bairns to go into the foundling home. I've left letters about them in a box on the downstairs mantel shelf."
Wordlessly, Tibby patted her hand, and soon Nanny was asleep again, her breathing harsh and shallow. The watching women glanced at each other, for this signalled the approach of the end.